It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bolland, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys.
Hello, folks, and welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys podcast, where we explore the omnichannel digital journey of brands and retailers and service providers. I'm, of course, one of your co-hosts, Sheree, and today I'm by myself because my dear friend and co-founder of the CPG Guys, Peter, is airborne. Of course, I refer to him affectionately as the data and loyalty guru, and our new and third CPG guy, Brian, is out traveling as well. At the time of this recording, they're both headed to Los Angeles to see me, so I can't really hold him accountable for missing this. Before we get to our esteemed guest today, let me remind our audience to visit cpgguys.com on a browser where you can find links to our podcast on all the major podcast platforms, 45+. And if you're already not doing so, follow us on LinkedIn. All you got to do is go to a browser, type linkedin.com in the search bar, put CPG Guys, and there hit the plus blue follow button. You can find all our new content every day of the week, 7 days a week, even on the weekends. We're also proud to be sponsors of Next Stop, formerly Network of Executive Women, whose mission is to advance all women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. We are actually giving away 50 memberships to Next Stop. If you're a female founder from a startup or your organization is not a partner with Next Stop, get in touch with us at contact@cpgguys.com for more information. Once again, that's contact@cpgguys.com for more information. The digital liner notes of this episode will, of course, contain hyperlinks to our site, our LinkedIn page, and our landing page on NextUp site. If you're not a member already, do click it and do join NextUp and promote gender equality. On to our main event. So joining us today for today's episode is Gina O'Halloran, Director of US Media, none other than Diageo, and the SVP of CPG Strategy and Sales at Aki, our dear friend Risa Crandall. Risa, of course, is a multi-guest starring artist on the CPG Guys, and this is one of several episodes of Aki partnering with the CPG Guys. If you go to our website, you can easily find several others by simply going to cpgguys.com. In the search bar, typing Aki, spelled A-K-I, and you'll find five other episodes. This, of course, is the sixth. Join me in welcoming to the podcast both Risa and Gina. Risa and Gina, welcome. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on. Great to meet you. And yeah, it's Friday. It's great.
So happy to be back. It's been a little bit of time. So really love being back in the studio with you, Sri, and miss the other folks, but I know they're listening in as soon as they can.
Let's make it official. Peter, we actually owe Risa the famous Saturday Night Live jacket. We got to make that happen very quickly.
Please do. Please do. I can't wait. I'll wear it with pride.
Before we get to the questions or prepared for our conversation, Risa, let me start with you. Would you kindly let our audience know where on the web they can learn more about Aki, and then can you give us a brief introduction to your company?
You bet. So you can find all about Aki if you go to our website, which is a.ki, pretty much the shortest website address out there because we get right to the point. So we are Aki Technologies, pronounced Aki, which Sri knows very well as far as think of it as a key to your success. And what we are is a company that focuses on Moments AI to unlock receptivity, to understand if we should be serving a message to the consumer. And if the answer is yes to that, then serving them a personalized message that will connect them with the content in a relevant way that drives higher performance. So it's been a powerful unlock that we've been able to bring to market for the last 8 years. And now that we're part of the Inmar Intelligence family, first party data, social and creator tools with other partners that are just many to name. So it's a really fantastic point in the journey for Aki.
Congratulations for all the success, Risa. You know, when you first came on the show over a year and a half ago, we've seen the growth of Aki. No debate in my head, a key to your success indeed. So Gina, that's what we're going to decompose on this episode, why it's a key to success at Diageo. But first, if I can ask you, can you give us a brief introduction of what you do at Diageo, Gina?
Sure. So I head up our media planning, buying, connections planning for Diageo US. For those who might not know, Diageo is a top Bev Alc distributor. We have over 200 brands, some of them very iconic, Johnny Walker, Smirnoff, Bailey's, Guinness, along with many others. And, you know, I think we all have jobs where we have one description on paper and then it kind of bleeds into a lot of other projects and territories. But from an on-paper perspective, I would say, you know, I look after our media investment across our entire portfolio. And my goal is to really make sure that we're investing our money as strategically as possible, as effectively as possible, and then hopefully as efficiently as possible so we can get in front of as many consumers as we need. And then the other side of it, which I really enjoy being in sort of a centralized function, is having an opportunity to work with brands as well as our commercial organization to really understand what are our business objectives and then work to translate that into the media and connections world and how we want to show up in front of consumers. And then, like I said, there's a lot of other projects that touch digital transformation, measurement, et cetera, but that would be the core of what I do.
Media, digital transformation. This is going to be a fun episode across the board. So thank you for that. Thank you to both of you. We'll, of course, include links to both your LinkedIn profiles and the Diageo and Aki corporate sites in the digital liner notes of this podcast episode. So let me get it going, and I'll start off, Gina, with the first question for you. You, of course, graduated UPenn, then spent about a decade at Is it Carrot or Carat?
Cara.
And now 5+ years at Diageo, but I noticed that you've stayed in the area of leading roles in media management. Given the world of media is so different from 5-7 years ago when media was largely static, the digital world has changed it completely. Take us through those years from UPenn to Carat to Diageo and your advice as a person for those wanting to follow in your footsteps and stay in the media leadership space like you?
Sure. So it's interesting. I hadn't even thought about it that way, but I guess you're right. I have been in the media leadership space. And in my mind, I've had so many different roles that it's felt very dynamic and not necessarily like I'm sort of just in media. But when I was graduating, truthfully, I just wanted to get to New York. I wanted to get to New York and I wanted to do it independently. I wanted to do something in marketing. I didn't know exactly what. And I started actually at a small digital startup. Doesn't even exist today. It was sort of affiliate email marketing, but it was a foot in the door. And then I realized, okay, I need to move into something probably more established where I can learn more of the ropes of the industry, and then found my way into the agency world. And then, you know, quickly from there, moved into Kara, where I spent the next 12 years of my career. I started actually in digital planning and buying, and it was a really interesting time in the industry. I actually, at the time, worked on a different BevAlk client, which was, you know, gave me a foray into that industry, which I really enjoyed. But it was also so much about helping people understand the power of digital media at a time where people wanted to invest, but didn't always know how or what to expect from it. After that, I actually moved into more of a digital strategy role, working on Procter & Gamble. It was a very interesting experience. I would say the first number of months, I had kind of no idea what language everyone was speaking and trying to get myself up to speed. But I then really loved that experience of having, you know, a traditional CPG, and felt like I learned so much and then was actually able to pivot into more of a total planning and account management role, which really took me beyond just digital media planning and buying. And then honestly, after a while on the agency side, after I had my second child, I was coming back to run the Diageo business, which is an amazing opportunity, huge, you know, account, one that I was very interested in, and a large team. But I started to find that for me personally, the balance wasn't quite there. And it happened to be that I had a friend at Diageo, there was an opening, and then the rest is sort of history. And sort of made my way there. But, you know, even at Diageo, where I think it's been fantastic to get a different side of the business from now the client side of it, I can't say enough about having kind of that agency background and the agency experience and now both sides of the fence. The advice that I might give is I think in any role, whether you're starting or later in your career, don't take for granted the work that you're doing. I know a lot of us want to get ahead. We want to get ahead quickly. But I'll tell you, even to this day, like I look back on the things I learned from my digital planning and buying, and they're so critical for me to even understand the foundations of operational infrastructure. So I would say take every day as a learning experience, no matter what level you're in. You know, I think the other piece of advice I would say is even though I've stayed in media, I did take on really different responsibilities. Don't doubt yourself. If you think you're not technically, quote unquote, qualified for a role, that's really in your head. If you're passionate, if you are curious, and if, you know, you're conscientious, you'll find a way to find the right people to help you and to learn. So don't ever let that be a barrier to kind of swerving your way through the industry.
Thank you, Gina. There's a lot packed in there about just a career in media leadership is what I would call it. I'm going to come back and summarize later on. I actually made some notes here about how your career actually blossomed through the different phases. And I think it's very interesting. We should share that with everybody. Risa, I'm going to jump right in and go straight to the heart of what a key does, which is receptive advertising at the moments that matter. So can you give us a overview one more time about the importance of receptive advertising and how a key enables that for brands?
Absolutely. And I'll first say, I love what Gina said, because that is very true. I pivoted into ad technology and didn't know ad technology, didn't know more technology, but had the curiosity, had the passion, had the interest to learn. And I just encourage people all the time when they say to me, how did you do it? How did you make the pivot? When folks who know me for a little bit of time or a long time know that my time at Aki has been my favorite of all my career homes. And if I hadn't just taken that opportunity when someone said, you can do it, I wouldn't be here today. So I'm so glad that someone gave me a turbo boost. I needed a little bit of a turbo boost and have the confidence. So I echo what Gina said. So I've been here at Aki for 3 years. And why I'm so passionate about what we do is we really listen to the consumer as far as what does the consumer respond to. And we've done surveys, we've done multiple years in a row, which is called a receptivity study. and looking at what does the consumer spark to? What makes advertising effective? We all put a lot of time and energy and insights into a marketing campaign, but we have to also think about the consumer, right? So that it is meeting them and they take an action forward. And so what I'm so passionate about, I've always felt like I'm a brand marketer in disguise, is that if I'm working on this campaign for any one of the brands, I want to make sure that consumers not only see it, but they connect with it and they take an action. And in my journeys, I haven't always seen that. But here at Akee, what we do is we unlock receptivity based on different signals, over 40 different signals that tell us about you. And now that we are part of Inmar, we have first-party purchase-based data across all the top 200 retailers. So really knowing what's going into your basket, what flavor that you like, what team that you support, what's your fandom, understanding the different elements of how you like to transact. Are you adding things to a list? Are you adding things to a cart? Are you buying in store? Yes, all of them. But in that particular moment that only Akee has with our Moments AI, we can identify what to serve them. And that's like the science behind it. The art behind it is what the consumer now sees, right? That's the critically element of how this all delivers, is understanding when the consumer sees that message, what is in the personalization? So everything from the consumer's persona. And that has shown at the receptivity level, the highest score. If I see me in an ad, someone who looks like me, does the activities I do, they love to cook, they love college football, I'm more likely to take an action forward. So the personalization brings together the look and feel, even the audio of the messaging, the voiceover, the music. Again, your fandom is a big part of it. But also, am I a loyal, lapsed, competitive shopper, for example? Where am I in the journey of that brand? Having the personalization speak to, I used to buy the brand and I strayed away. How can I bring that consumer back? Different than that loyal consumer, how do I get another occasion so that the consumer will buy more of that product? And if it's a new consumer, we need to even work harder in the personalization to give them the reasons to not only believe, I like that phrase, reason to believe, but the reason to buy. It's really the power combination of those two. So the personalization is then what that consumer sees. And that to me is, should be everywhere, but it's really not. And what I love about Akee is that it is what we do here. And then we measure, you know, and that's critically important too, to make sure that we can measure the brand effectiveness, but also the sales performance. Because here in marketing, we're here to sell products, right? We can talk funnels all we want. And Sri knows that I don't even think there should be a funnel anymore, because the consumer's in the driver's seat and they want things to be shoppable when they're ready. So having that opportunity to really connect with the consumer so we can prove that sales performance out is what we do every day here at Akee, which is why I'm just thrilled that we work with Diageo so much and they're such a fantastic partner and that there's opportunities to come.
You know, Risa, you triggered something here that I think we need to develop for the industry, and maybe we can do that with Akee. The word funnel, right? Full funnel, mm-hmm. was really created when static media and the lower funnel were different pieces of the pie, where static media had to drive the large impressions, hence shaped like the mouth of the funnel, and then the conversion happened in store, which is completely different. You're 100% right, Risa. It makes no sense to use the marketing funnel anymore as a mechanism when everything is full funnel these days. And if it's not full funnel, the brand is actually doing something wrong. I strongly feel so, right? But a little hidden in what you said over here, I think, was something very powerful. The fact that you guys are now part of Inmar and have access to first-party data, the hyper-targeting and personalization here has got to be incredible. And we'll dig to that a little bit more towards the end, what that means. But Gina, let me flip it over to you. I'm curious to learn, at Diageo, what is the partnership you have with Akee? Is it specifically your team in media leadership, since your team is doing the media buying? And then how has this blossomed?
Yeah, so we've been working more and more over the last number of months. I would say that, yes, there is absolutely some leadership that comes from our team. But truly, to make this happen, it's very cross-functional. So, for example, we need to make sure we're bringing brands along on the journey, especially when we're talking about content development. We really want to make sure it stays true to the core ethos of the brand and how they want to show up in market. You know, we're working more collaboratively with parts of our commercial organization. So understanding, when we do have access to this great data, how do we want to look at it from a retailer or a geographic location? And then also potentially when we're making the connection points into a shoppable experience. And then, of course, the agency, right? Like, we have to actually work with them to make sure that it all happens and gets into market. So I would say, yes, we've been leading parts of the relationship, but we can't do it alone and absolutely have to bring our partners along on the journey. And I think our relationship, has evolved. Reese, I really liked what you were saying before, and I do think part of the reason we partner well together is it is very much for us about, we know what our business objectives are and what we want to say for our brands, but it's really about understanding the consumer signals that we're able to play with. And I appreciate that there's a thoughtfulness when we come together about really understanding what is it that, again, we want to do from a campaign standpoint, but then what are all the triggers, moments, occasions, retail data, first party data, et cetera, that we can work with, and then align on what are the right ones for that particular campaign in that particular moment. And I think what I'm really excited about is sort of this next iteration of the way that we're partnering, where we're really trying to set out very specific learning agendas so that we can start to deconstruct the performance of these individual factors. So is it the audience? Was it the moment? Is it the content? How many versions of the content? Do we need 100? Could we survive with 20? I think that's where it's starting to get interesting, because we're bringing together the measurement sides of both of our organizations and also being really thoughtful about setting up tests and campaigns in a way where we have very clear learning agendas to make sure that it's actually driving the business in the way that we think we should be that we are.
Yeah. And I agree. And the magic happens when we all collaborate, right? With our brands, our agency partners, with our clients direct. That's truly when it all comes together in the way that it should. And I'm so pleased that with our relationship with Diageo, it works so well that way. And that is a big part of the success that we've driven.
And Gina, just to go back to that question for 1 second, is the primary win you're getting the fact that you can hyper personalize contextually, and that the consumer signals that you referred to are with the Inmar partnership? Now, that's a big deal, obviously, and you can get to the hyper personalization, and that's why a key?
I think both. So obviously there's a unique data set there. And I think it's also the combination of many data sets, in fact. Like, there's the moments, there's the in-store piece that comes through Inmar. So it's the combination of them that I think does make Aki unique. But also, this space of personalization is complicated. And there are very many steps in the process that need to happen and take place. And I do think there's a more turnkey aspect that comes with this partnership, where it's not just access to the data, it's how you parse out that data, how you decide what's important. And then it's also the content creation that the Aki team is able to handle in-house. So that part of the relationship is very helpful as well, because it allows us to do something in a more turnkey fashion that in other circumstances would require way more partners to be part of the conversation, and probably a lot more time to actually get it into market.
Yeah, those are great points. The agility, the strategicness, we do have a creative studio here and a video production studio, and that serves multi purposes. It's one for agility and strategy, but also from an efficiency standpoint, so we can put the hardworking dollars into the media to drive the performance. And that's, sometimes I almost forget to mention that because it's so integral to what we do, but that's a piece that is critically important.
And so, Risa, let's jump right there. What a perfect segue. So Gina declared the partnership is turnkey. It's dynamic, much faster than she's found in several others, and a big part of the reason why she's working with you. So what can one expect from your side of the fence when one starts a partnership with Aki? Like, how long does it take to get started? Is it a long discussion process? Because there's several data sets involved. Does it take months? Does it take weeks? And then once you actually put it in play, and there's ads being served, or the consumer is actually getting contextual messaging, how does one actually measure it?
Yeah, so great question. So we move very quickly at Aki. We're thoughtful, but we're nimble. And there we have a lane, right, that we really understand. So, and we have a very talented team here at Aki and great partners that give us great direction. So from brief to putting a campaign in market can be as quick as 2 weeks. When it's video, we'd like to have a little bit of time just to make sure, that extra time to make sure we get all the approvals. But we put the creative together in a matrix. So that also keeps it very nimble from an approval standpoint for both the internal customers and the legal teams. Working with Diageo, certainly in the BevApp category, it's going to be more complex. There's different requirements. So we want to make sure we have time for that. 2 to 3 weeks is very manageable. Even the very first larger scale program that we did across Diageo needed a quick turn. There was an agility there and we really proved ourselves out. And so we can launch very quickly because we have all the tools in-house too. Like Gina said, it's not bringing together a whole host of partners. They're all within the house. So that helps us speed to market much faster. We optimize throughout the campaign. So daily we're optimizing. We get results back also very quickly. And that's an important part for the insights that it brings, but also how do we take the campaign forward for the next wave? So we get results back in as quickly as 2 weeks post-campaign. And when we're doing the brand studies and the sales lift studies, those might take 3 to 4, just looking at the look back windows to make sure we have all the data collected. But that agility is a big part of why Aki is such a great partner to our brands, because when they're ready to move, they're ready to move, right? And we want to be on, you know, running alongside them. So we're very quick into market and we're keeping everything on point throughout the process with our creative and production team and from the analytics side as well.
And Risa, I don't want to spend a second here on measurement, right? So the results come back in 2 weeks. When they do come back in 2 to 3 weeks, what does your client actually see?
Sure. So they're going to see everything from your digital metrics. So for example, video, we're going to see video complete rates. Ours happen to be very strong because we know the moment of receptivity when a consumer is open to and has that receptivity and attention state to watch a video. So that is a big part of that difference that we bring. We know when to serve a video and not just serving it at this, you know, kind of push it out there. If the consumer, based on their moment, is in a video receptive moment, our video complete rates, again, speak for themselves. So we're seeing all those digital metrics. We're seeing if the consumer added to cart or added to list. We see all those and report those back. We also report back on all the moments. So we have over 140 different moments in our AI engine, and we're reporting back to our clients what were the top performing moments. Sometimes we see some very interesting, you know, components that go into that where a client may not have recognized that there are different moments that really impact. I'll say people think that, for example, the going to a store moment must be happening, for example, only when you're out and about. It's actually not true. 43% of those decisions happen at home before someone heads out to run their errands or hit a store, or, you know, stop in somewhere. So really interesting moments that come back. So those come back very quickly for us. And we look at the audiences and how those perform, the times of day, the day of week, how that also reflects. And then we'll get the sales and the brand study back in that little bit more time, in about 2 more weeks time. And then we're going to be able to see what was the sales impact of the campaign. Did we move brand favorability? Did we move purchase intent? And then we're reporting that all back in one holistic end of campaign report with recommendations forward. So that's an important part of the strategy place that we play, is not here's your campaign and it was great. It's here's your campaign. These are the things we can even take forward and make the next one even stronger. So it's from a partnership lens really powerful, because there's always learnings that we have with every single one of our campaigns. We're mobile, connected TV, digital, out of home, now social and creator. So there's so much more opportunity to learn from those different avenues than ever before.
How awesome. And the fact that right at the end you talked about taking the outcomes that you're measuring and then informing the next campaign to already start from an optimized fashion makes it special. So let me remind the audience that I'm speaking with Risa Crandall from Aki and Gina O'Halloran, Director of US Media at Diageo. So Gina, the next one's for you. How do you leverage personalization technology in your media strategies overall? And then I'll jump to Risa after that to follow up to say, is personalization technology the primary reason that your partnership with Diageo is successful? But Gina, let's ask you first.
Yeah, so we definitely are leveraging that type of technology. But I will say just my observation, and I will say also this has very much been a journey that we're still on to figure all of the pieces out. There's sometimes a tendency to want to jump to the really shiny object. So DCO, dynamic content optimization, awesome. We can make like 100 iterations of a piece of copy, or even like a CDP. Great, that's wonderful. But I'll give an example. Like, maybe I wanted to make you a wonderful cocktail that you're going to enjoy, and I have thousands of ingredients, and I'm just going to throw a bunch into the glass, hand it over. It's probably not going to be exactly what you want. And so I think that's like, if I had understood your mood, what flavors you like, any additional information about you, I could actually make a much more personalized cocktail for you that you actually will, you know, have a better chance of enjoying. And I think that's the journey we've been on, is that when people sort of start with chasing the shiny technology, you're losing insight of the process, which I don't know if this is right or wrong, but what I've started calling it is dynamic decisioning, which is basically a process where first you need to understand what data sets are available to us. The second is which ones do we use? Not every piece of data is created equally. So even, for example, when we partner with Aki and there's moments data and audience data and the Inmar data set, like which of those is really the right one for us to leverage for a particular campaign? And then once we have that piece in place, then you start thinking about the content creation and the different iterations and the kind of technology you bring in. So I think the short answer is, yes, are we partnering with the tech and is it evolving the way that we show up in media so that we can be more data-driven and create better experiences when we do show up? Yes. But the real unlock, I think, is creating this operating system where you can make those dynamic decisions, whether it's about which data set, which brand do I really put forward, you know, especially for a portfolio business, and then also figuring out which particular content do I want to put forward and what do I want to say. So it's evolving day by day. You know, we are certainly making investments in different kinds of partners and tech, but I think that it's, again, the marriage of the tech and then the strategy and the people to really operate it in the right way to make those decisions seamlessly so we show up in front of our consumers in the most personalized way we can.
And then, Risa, I'm going to bring it back to you for that very same question. How do you think of personalization technology at Aki, especially now that you're part of Inmar?
Yeah, so we really think about it as an important variable into what we do. You do have to think, as Gina said, of all the levers, right, that need to be pulled as far as the content you're running on, right? Where is the media running? You need to think about it from the creative format, the creative content, the customization and personalization, the data. You need to think about the device type too, you know, that connected TV is an important avenue that we've made some, you know, really interesting and unique strides in, but you need to think about the device type as far as how you personalize. It's going to be different when you're on connected TV than when you're on your mobile device, as well as digital out of home, for example, or social and creator. So where I really see the value of it is thinking through each initial project, thinking about the tools that are available, choosing the right tools, because I agree, it's not choosing them all just for the sake of choosing them all. It's not having, as Gina said so perfect, it's not having 500,000 permutations for the number. It's about what are the right number of permutations that are going to achieve the goal to the different audiences, to the different occasions, for example. So we think all of that through, as well as shoppability and how that consumer might take a transaction forward. So the power of personalization is really thinking through all the components that go into it and then the science behind it so that, again, the consumer experience is the most powerful, optimized, and measured upon.
Thank you for the clear explanation of personalization technology. But Gina, so now that we've touched that topic and y'all have kind of clearly explained personalization technology is more than just a technology stack. What does that mean at your organization? Because when I talk to marketers across the board in the industry, the question I ask them is, in today's day and age, with the availability of data sets and the technology stack, like why isn't 100% of marketing personalized? I understand that for certain campaigns like innovation launch, you're trying to reach a broad audience, but even those, you can probably predict who your consumer base is going to be. So what does it mean for Diageo? And then your role as a U.S. media captain, director of U.S. media here at Diageo, how has your role evolved thinking about personalization and a focus on it?
Yeah, so I mean, yes, I would love for 100% of everything to be personalized. I mean, I think that there's realities, for example, in our industry, right, where there's a lot that happens in the physical world. And then there's obviously a lot happening in the digital world. And there's a lot of growth happening in places like e-commerce. Part of it is figuring out how do we connect the dots across all of that and start to create a unified view of our consumers so that whether we're coming across that person, digital, physical, whatever it might be, that we're creating the best experience and personalized moment for them. But it's truthfully, it's not easy. I mean, like you can do it in buckets and you can start doing it in silos, you know, in certain digital platforms, of course, that is much easier. But to do it as a unified system, there's a lot of complexity. So that's why I would say, you know, maybe right now, not 100% of everything is personalized, but I think the journey is to definitely get there and ultimately to try to put the consumer first and make sure that every interaction and experience that a consumer has with one of our brands is made better through the usage of data and consumer intent signals so that we're showing up in the right way and hopefully also adding utility and value to the consumer experience. In terms of my job, I think that we definitely have to stretch ourselves into a lot of different areas to really make sure that this idea of personalization can come to life in media. So for one, as much as I love media, you saw my career journey, I think you have to be objective and understand that in today's world, media is an entry point. It is not the end and it is not the beginning. And so we have to be able to look at the consumer journey from a very objective perspective, understanding that, again, media is one part of it, but how does it connect into CRM? How does it connect into data capture? How does it connect into a shoppable moment? So that's one thing, is just having that very objective view. I think the second area is having we don't have to be the exact data expert on every single piece of data, but we have to understand how to use it and apply it to the media ecosystem. So having that ability to understand, you know, as we collect more first party, what do we do with it? How do we feed it back into our media cycle and then potentially, retarget a consumer with a more, I know we didn't want to talk about the funnel, but let's say lower funnel message to drive. So we really have to think about data application. And then hand in hand with that is, I think, growing skill sets around data analysis. With so many signals coming in, sometimes you can feel either like paralyzed or that you're drinking out of a fire hose. And so you need to build the skill set and the people who can actually devote time to look at the different signals and help understand which ones should you pay attention to that are going to be most correlated to consumer action and which ones can we put to the side. And then the last two things I'll say is agility. Like, absolutely, to make personalization happen, you have to start creating a model of agility and feeling comfort with not knowing every answer or how every single thing is going to work. And then the last piece I'll say is that media is an amazing canvas, but what we put on that canvas is also very, very important. And increasingly, I think we're getting the questions around, help us understand the consumer mindset, the receptivity to different kinds of content, and give guidance around how we should show up in specific platforms and mediums. And so I think, you know, I don't foresee myself being behind a director's camera anytime soon, but I do see that myself and my team need to at least be able to speak intelligently to what content is needed to create the best reaction from our consumers.
Gina, I wouldn't worry about being behind a director's camera because you're already on the CPG guys here.
There you go. Exactly. This is perfect.
And you're in the director's chair on all things innovation and media and transformation. So you're already there. You're already there.
That's right.
We're going to make Gina popular now. We're going to make Gina popular in the director's chair. But that said, jokes apart, I liked how you finished that with content receptivity and how content has gotten hyper-personalized and you can't have just vanilla content for everybody as the media world did for quite some time. But I do see the industry changing and I do see personalized content. Long way to go, but the right word you use there is the one I think we really need to attach ourselves to, is just content receptivity and then tailoring the content based on what that receptivity outcome is. And then what better partner to do it than Aki, because of the data engines you all have and the fact that you all are in this space of content receptivity and hyper-personalization. So Gina, all that said, right, I think now I have a fun question for you. On the CPG guys, we always ask our guests to wrap up with a prediction. And the prediction I'd love to ask you about is, what is your prediction in this personalized, customized commerce consumer journey? Where do you think this will go? And now that dynamic personalization is real, will it change even more? Would it get down to an individual household?
Yeah, so I would say that my prediction, but I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, is that especially as we are coming up across the next generation of consumers, there's really not going to even be this concept of physical versus digital world. I mean, it's just going to be the world. And I think cracking and figuring out how you create the best possible experience as a consumer moves through all parts of that world is really, you know, the main thing that we need to figure out. The other piece, I guess I would say, is continuing to think about what is the value exchange, especially when, on one hand, I think we even as ourselves as consumers, right, we probably appreciate a certain level of personalization and a brand understanding us and knowing us, but we also value our privacy. And I think in a world where those are going to continue to have some, you know, some odds with one another, figuring out how you have that right value exchange is going to be critically important. And it's also not an easy answer, especially when you're thinking about it again and crossing over between physical and digital worlds. Did I answer all parts of your question? Just making sure.
You certainly did, but I'm going to just bring it back to the dynamic personalization piece and see if you feel we've already evolved to a stage where we got to do a lot more experimentation before the next iteration here, or do you feel we're well on our way?
I think we're on our way. I think that the challenge is just, again, figuring out in some cases how you do it in a scaled and replicable way. I think that, you know, there's the value of it has proven through campaign after campaign, but then really figuring out the infrastructure to do it repeatedly is where probably a bit more headway needs to be made. Yeah, from that lens, absolutely on the way. Just have to figure out how to do more of it all the time and ingest, you know, more and more data signals and across more platforms.
Thank you so much, Risa. Now, you know, like we declared right up front, this is your sixth time on the show, but the last time we had you, I think, was fall of 2022. So I'd love for you to start up top here. Give us the overall mission, purpose of Akee. Bring it back into what is dynamic hyper-personalization. And then let me also ask you from a roadmap perspective, what our audience can expect from Akee that's coming up in the, you know, whatever you can share in calendar year 2023 that's already planned.
Yeah, so it really is thinking about where the technology is bringing together moments and personalization, moments being the different unlocks that we have from a receptivity standpoint, to unlock where that consumer is in the brand journey, to personalize to, and looking at multiple triggers. Just like Gina said, it's not one trigger, it's multiple different triggers that really give us that understanding of that consumer at scale. And then the personalization really coming forward to leveraging the opportunity for the consumer to have the better brand experience, being privacy compliant, being respectful is also critically important so that they see a message that is really aligned to them as a not only a brand consumer, but how they, whether they're more of a food-oriented person, they like to cook, whether they're somebody who likes to order in, whether somebody who's a little bit of both, who's trying to learn how to try different recipes, for example. So really understanding them from a lifestyle persona standpoint is a critical unlock with receptivity and your ability to connect. So bringing all that forward is really critically important. So it is the power of the moments plus the personalization that does drive the highest performance here at Akee. And again, we've talked about Inmar, and that's really powerful. The data that we have now at our disposal are very passionate about CTV and our solution that is called CTV One. We understood from talking to our brand marketers that there's frequency fatigue, right? We all watch a show, you know, I was watching Only Murders in the Building for a period of time and saw the same message repeatedly. It's not a good brand experience. It's not great for the consumer. And you have to argue, is the dollar really doing the job there? Is it efficient because of that frequency? So when we heard from our marketers, which is how so many of the products at Akee are born, is listening to marketers and interest and also pain points. And this was a pain point that they asked, could you solve the frequency fatigue on CTV with your personalization? We said, let's have our product team look at that. We did. We piloted it out last summer. And yes, we can guarantee one ad, one time. So we have unlocked that and then used the mobile device as that companion to the CTV for that shoppability. So we're really passionate about that and where that can bring in with our social and creator, how that can come to life. And then I'd say the last is the one that is about AI personalization. So we have our Moments AI. So we're always very familiar and comfortable with that muscle behind AI, but now bringing that forward into personalization. And what are the lanes that brands are comfortable in there? We understand there's a very careful thinking about how a brand comes to market. So we want to be mindful to what parameters we put on what AI can bring to a personalization in both creative and content. But even if we start slowly with the different colors that might be part of a campaign AI oriented, or maybe even the different music in the background, that would not affect the brand, but might enhance the brand in a way that's all brand safe and approved up front. So really excited about what that can bring. So those are three things that we're jazzed about in 2023, that some we've already piloted and got to market and some that are on the roadmap to get going and looking for the opportunities to be able to expand there.
You know, the CPG guys are certainly looking forward to all of this coming out into the marketplace, especially the way you wrap that portion up by talking about one ad, one time. I almost want to make a slogan over here, a key to your success, one ad, one time. And now that AI is in the mix, you got to come back, Risa, and decompose the AI element for this for our audience at some time. But let me go to my fun part now where I get to summarize what I learned. So let me see if I got this right, and y'all can keep me in check here. So we started up top with Gina giving such an eloquent explanation of what a career in media looks like, affiliate marketing, digital strategy, media planning, agency side, to brand media leadership. And all of a sudden you realize to be a media leader like Gina is, you need these experiences across the board, and that's what completes the full cup. And the best piece of advice she put out there, don't doubt yourself. Risa jumped right in after that by talking about her pivot into ad tech and people constantly asking her why, how did you get this far, etc. And then we started jumping into what I would call the receptive advertising space. Great learning for me that you actually have 40 plus signals about a consumer within Mars first party data, which means essentially what you're doing is you're connecting marketing into actionability at the end of the day. Then I asked Gina, you know, how does a partnership work? Which teams are in play? Gina basically said, look, without the cross-functional partnership, that's not just the media team. You're not going to be successful because content development is a big piece of this. And later on in this episode, we talked about receptive content. And then the piece of understanding consumer signals, which means a consumer insights team, is probably in play here as well. And you basically refer to the notion of a learning agenda for projects and ensuring you can deliver against the learning agenda for that given project. And what I think makes Aki a little unique here, there's so many things we've kind of discovered in this episode, but what makes it unique is the power of these data sets that allow the dynamic personalization in the first place. And how you summarize that was calling it a turnkey partnership that has speed and agilities that others would take much longer. And then I asked Risa, how does that happen? And what I got back was, you're clear about the lane you work in. It's receptive advertising at the moment that matters. And 2 to 3 weeks to begin a campaign from a discussion to actually putting it in play in the marketplace. And then the results come back a couple of weeks after that. We chatted metrics, talked about video complete rates, 140 moments for consumers. Let me repeat that, 140 moments for consumers. And then audience performance metrics, and then the sales impact with the decomposition of how an audience actually interacted, which means somebody you actually purchased, how they interacted with the ad as well. And that allows you to take all that data and make recommendations for optimizing the next campaign, which is pretty powerful. Then we jumped a little bit into this world called hyper-personalization. Gina eloquently explained media is just an entry point, but the more important thing is how does it connect to a CRM and a shoppable moment, which is what many in the industry will seek at the end of the day, is the product actually moving through the shelf, digital or physical. And as more first-party data is collected, what to do with it, what signals matter, and that gave birth to the word content receptivity. Such a powerful world. We chatted a little bit about, is content going to be hyper-personalized? And I think that is the reality of our industry, which then you came back with on the prediction side, Gina, with one world, no physical, digital experiences are what matter, and we shouldn't really be talking about this e-commerce thing and physical and digital and all the stuff that the industry has baked over the last 10 years. And then I jumped to the value exchange with Risa. You wrapped it up with, I think, the new slogan, Aki, a key to your success, one ad, one time, and it's backed by artificial intelligence. Ladies, how'd I do?
Amazing.
Home run.
There we go. So let me remind our audience that you can find all of our content on a browser by going to cpgguys.com. And if you or your company has thought leadership to contribute to our community, brands, retailers, or service providers, drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com. Again, that's contact@cpgguys.com. And maybe you can join us on the podcast too. Don't forget to drop us a rating at cpgguys.com. It's on the top navigation bar to the right. Thank you for our LinkedIn 20K followers. We are nobody without you. You followed us right from the first episode, which I'll never forget, Peter and me trying to record a YouTube video. And here we are today. Risa and Gina, I can't thank you enough for joining us on this podcast and decomposing what hyper-contextual receptive advertising means. So thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. And it was really a great discussion. And just powerful, and I hope others really enjoy and appreciate the content.
Folks, that's a wrap. Remember the word, Aki, a key to your success. With that, we'll see you guys on another episode of the CPG Guys.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.